Hey, it's Bethany here. Can you think back to a time when you used to be super excited to get out of bed, that you couldn't wait for the day ahead because it was full of possibility and you were living into your potential? Sometimes it's hard to remember what those days felt like. If you're anything like me, you've experienced moments where you're lying in bed at night and you're thinking, is this all there is? And then immediately you feel guilty about it because you tell yourself that you should be grateful for what you have and where you're at in life, that you should just be happy. And you begin to wonder if there's something wrong with you. I'm here to tell you that you're not alone, that it's okay to want more. In fact, I promise that there's a big life inside of you. It's waiting to be unleashed. That's what we do at Big Life You. I help women who are ready for change step into creating a life that they love. And that may mean getting your health back on track, improving boundaries in relationships, understanding what it is that you really want. Stop living under all of the titles of mom, sister, wife, career woman, whatever that is for you. We break out of your box of having and shoulding, and we step into your life of more. Check out Big Life You. We start again November 9th. Go to www.blu2020.com. I'll see you on the inside. Hey, listeners, it's Bethany. Today, you're going to hear a conversation I had with Lynn Power. She's a longtime ad executive, formerly CEO of J. Walter Thompson in New York, turned entrepreneur. She launched Masami Clean Premium Hair Care in February of this year, of 2020. Lynn believes in disrupting the status quo, building high-performing teams, and helping women find their voices. You're going to hear about Lynn's journey from being a CEO to really completely starting a brand from scratch. And you've got to check out her products. LoveMasami.com. It's MASAMI.com. And the link to that is in the show notes. So enjoy this episode. And until next time, stay dialed in. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Dialed In. Today, I'm visiting with Lynn Power, and we're talking about her journey. I'm doing air quotes, you can't see me, but leaving her safe corporate job and launching her own company in an industry that some would consider scary. So Lynn, yes. I'm going to just let you start and share your story wherever you feel comfortable.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you so much for that intro and for having me. So yeah, I am a corporate citizen by sort of my years of experience in the business. I worked for 30 years as an ad executive, working for most of the major holding companies, ad agency holding companies. And my last job in the ad industry was CEO of J. Walter Thompson, New York. So I really loved doing that for a really long time. And it wasn't what I went to school for. I was actually going to go in the FBI. That's a whole different podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know, I kind of wanted to be Clarice Starling really badly, but that didn't quite pan out. And then I went into advertising and loved it. And I really figured out that for me, I'm somebody who likes to do a lot of things. I like to juggle a lot of things. I like to be really productive. And I like to sort of think about different challenges. And advertising is a perfect career for that because you work on different types of clients. One day you're working on pizza. The next day you're working on credit cards, you know what I mean? Like you really get to flex your brain. And I love this idea of using creativity as a business tool. You know, really thinking about how to solve problems with creative thinking. So that to me was really fun. And then, you know, you get more senior in your career and what happens, and people don't realize this, which I think is kind of interesting because it's in hindsight, very obvious, but the job changes dramatically. When you're in management, you're not doing any of the stuff I just described, really.
Right.
You're putting out fires dealing with HR, dealing with finance. Oh my God, the finance meetings I used to have daily. Exactly. I had that reaction as well. And you know, your job is now, you know, suddenly you're in charge of you know, in the case of J. Walter Thompson, New York, an office that had, you know, 600 people. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with problems every day. And you're not using really creativity. They're more problems. It's like, this person just quit. And, you know, this client's unhappy. And then what happened when I was there is we actually had a very big public lawsuit. It was the kickoff of the Me Too movement in advertising. So I was 2 years into the job at J. Walter Thompson, and our head of corporate communications globally sued the global CEO, my boss. And we found out about it because we read about it in the New York Post.
Oh, yeah.
So that ended up being the second 2 years of my life at JWT is dealing with that, which just compounded sort of the things I didn't really like to do. And I kind of wanted to stay until the lawsuit got sorted out, and it did get settled. Because I just felt, you know, a responsibility to the people that were there. There was a lot of confusion, it was just really challenging time. But when it was settled and everything was done, I was like, you know what? I'm not enjoying this anymore. Like, it is just not for me, like, not doing it. And once you get to be like at that level, your choices are you could either go way back down to somewhere earlier in your career where you're, you know, running a piece of business or something, or you could go somewhere else, another agency, and kind of do the same thing. But I'm like, I've done it. I really don't. It's not going to be that different. So
can I stop you for a minute?
Yeah, of course.
So first of all, I just want to say, number one, like having the awareness, right, that you even have a choice, because there's many people that would stay in a life-sucking position and feel like they were trapped and not have a way out. They wouldn't even see the choice. So, you know what I mean?
Well, I will tell you, I wasn't always that way. I actually, so my previous job before JWT was at an agency called Arnold. And I was there 8 years and I loved it. And I was running the New York office and we grew like 5 times in that time. Wow. I ran really great. But they brought in a new leader, a new CEO, who I did not get along with. Like from day one, we were clashing and fighting, and I was the feisty New Yorker who would question everything. And I'm actually from the Midwest, by the way. I'm not even like really a New, I mean, I am now because I've lived in New York so long, but I'm from the Midwest.
Where are you from in the Midwest?
I'm from Chicago.
Are you really? Okay, I grew up in Illinois, so not Chicago, but South. But, yeah.
But South, well, you probably, a lot of my friends went to U of I, and I went to Indiana University, and now my son goes to IU. And
oh, okay.
Anyway, so there's all that, but I was definitely the feisty New Yorker who was questioning a lot of his bad decisions, and it was months of this, and my husband was the one who said to me, you're miserable. Like, every day you come home and complain, and it's true, I was. He's like, why don't you just quit? And I literally, it was like a light bulb moment when I was like, wait, I could do that? Like, I hadn't actually thought that was an option.
Right.
I don't know. It's just because... Right. And part of it is because I'm one of those people who is a team player, who, you know, wants to dig in and work hard, and I don't want to fail. And, you know, you don't want to leave things behind unfinished. And so the idea of just quitting, I was like, and I really thought it through, and I'm like, actually, I've done everything I want to do at this agency. I've grown it fivefold, like, I don't like this guy. He's not going anywhere. Yes. Like, okay, I could do that. And that was extremely liberating.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And I think to have a partner who sort of like enabled that was amazing, because if he hadn't said that to me, I would probably still be there to, you know, plugging away. But I think the permission to kind of like just quit, and, you know, and there was no like angst over, well, what are you going to do next? Or, you know, it was like, I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got, you know, ended up going to JWT not that long after. But I think that was definitely a moment in time where I was like, wait a minute, I have way more control over my destiny than I realized. And now I see people that are like what I used to be like, mm-hmm. that are stuck in these jobs. And I say the same thing to them. I'm like, you don't have to do that. You right. have options.
Right.
You can leave. You know, you don't have to be tortured every day.
Right.
But it's hard. I think there's a mental hurdle that you have to get over that kind of gives yourself that permission to do that. And a lot of women, I think, more than men, are like me in the sense of like, well, I don't want to let anyone down.
Right.
You know right. what I mean? It's that part of it too.
Absolutely. Because then what does that mean? Like there's some grand meaning assigned that if you let people down, that somehow that means you're bad or you're a failure. And it's interesting that you bring that up because, you know, I tell my kids, your job is to let everybody down. You just don't let yourself down. Like you be you to the fullest, you know, do what you need to do for you, take care of you and not in a selfish, self-centered, non-giving yeah. kind of way, but truly like you can't live a big empowered life and do those things that are on your heart. If all you're worried about is ever letting everybody else down and their expectations, like you just can't.
It's so true, but so many people get wrapped up in that. And right. for a long time, I was somebody who was definitely a yes person mm-hmm. and and I've only recently learned how to say no, like in the last few years, but I would always be kind of like, I'll make it happen. I'll figure it out. And also the person who, even in my home life, would always just like get everything done, like mm-hmm. just make it all happen at home. And there definitely was a point where I was like, well, wait a minute, this is getting a little crazy. Like I have to figure out how to be more selfish, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't mean that in the way it sounds, but it's just about like there, I've put everyone else first for so long that when I left the ad agency, part of it was my own realization of, I want to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like forget, you know, what other people think. I don't care. Like I'm going to do what I think is fun.
Right. And that's how it, I mean, I think that's how it should be. And I came from corporate background in senior living. And so I watched a lot of people. I was with them. I'm a nurse too. So I was with them as they were passing away. And I heard story after story of, and it would sound like, I feel like I say this in like almost every episode of the podcast, but because it always comes back to this, but I had a good life, but I always wanted to be a teacher. I always wanted to travel. I always wanted to start my own business. I really wanted to see the Grand Canyon. I wanted to be a nurse. Like there were always buts, and I got really discouraged because I was watching all these dreams die with people. I even had a conversation with my grandma before she passed away. She lived at home for years. And she was like, every few months I get sick and then I need help. And then I'm okay for a while. And I want to stay in my home, but you know, your mom and your aunt think I should not. What do I do? And I'm like, what do you want to do? And she would always revert back to what she thought everybody else wanted her to do. And I'm like, Nima, what do you want to do? You're like an 89-year-old woman. What do you want to do? And she started crying and she's like, I don't even know how to answer that. I've never done what I wanted to do in my life. I always did what I thought everybody else wanted me to do. And I'm like, okay, now's your opportunity. Like, I mean, holy cow.
You know, yeah, she had to wait 89 years for, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's so funny that you tell the story because I have an almost identical one with my grandmother who in her 80s, she passed away when she was 85, but probably when she was 82, 83, she said to me, I can't remember the exact words, but basically that she had always wanted to have a career. You know, she had always wanted to work and not just work as like a secretary. She wanted to have a career. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to her, she looked at me as this like, oh my God, like, you know, the things that you're doing that I wish I could have done. Mm-hmm. And I do think about that sometimes that, you know, our generation can't take that for granted. And certainly the ones under us, you know, my mm-hmm. daughter can do whatever she wants now. I mean, she's 17 and can literally, you know, do whatever, mm-hmm. but it wasn't always the case, you know, mm-hmm. You know, the expectations on those older generations was that, no, this is, you're going to stay at home and deal with that. Mm-hmm. Thank God. I never subscribed to any of that because I would have been miserable.
Yeah.
So I'm just really glad that I found an industry that even when I was in it, okay, I started in 1989 in advertising. Mm-hmm. It was very Mad Men like. All my bosses were men. Mm-hmm. It was very testosterone heavy. But a lot of the junior people getting into the business were women. And guess why? Because women have great, better, I will argue, communication skills than men. And so it was a natural sort of, you know, an industry that kind of like lent itself to women's skills, multitasking, good communicators, good listeners, good at client service. You know what I mean? Like the things that women naturally do really well, mm-hmm. not to say that men can't do that. I've had some really good male bosses, so men can do that too. But, you know, I got in the industry in a time when there were a lot of women, you know, at that level. It's just not many of them made it through to the top. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge there was you still get penalized when you go have kids, you know? And I was working at a big agency on a big account. Mm-hmm. I had both my kids when I was at that same agency, but you feel like the men around you are moving past you, moving up, and you're sort of stuck and there's really nothing you can do. So you kind of just take those couple of years and you just suck it up and then you move on. But that's, hopefully that changes too, you know? And that's just a function of a generational thing as well. But I do hear a lot of women, in fact, I know a lot of women who dropped out of the workforce when they had kids because it was just too much. Like they just couldn't juggle, couldn't deal. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years, they're bored. Mm-hmm. They want to get back in it. It's really hard. You know, they've missed out on those skills and the capabilities that they need. And also now, if you think about like 10 years ago from today, especially in advertising and marketing, it was totally different.
I mean, well, just the technology piece of it, how you do it is, right? Just that alone.
And there's no TikTok and there is no, you know, Instagram and there, you know, all this stuff that we do now, it was a completely different kind of way of thinking about brand building back then. So you have to, if you're not in it, you don't get it really. So that's been an interesting thing, but anyway, so I left JWT and I felt this time I didn't have to like get my husband to say, hey, you can leave. I was like, no, I'm leaving. and I started a brand consultancy actually. And I was working mostly with startups and I kind of felt myself gravitating towards startups because of a couple things. Once my parents were entrepreneurs, my parents were small business owners. So I've kind of been around that.
Sure.
But I also felt like I could have a bigger impact working with startups because I'm working directly with the founder. I don't have layers of bureaucracy, which I've had, you know, working with a lot of my big corporate clients.
Right.
You get to see stuff get implemented like right away. I mean, I would have a conversation with a founder about, hey, think about this for your messaging or think about this for your content. And next week I'd look and they'd change it. They'd already done it, you know? So I really felt like I liked the instant gratification aspect of working that way and working with startups. And then of course I met my partner on my own business. And that was a little bit of serendipity as well, because he had been working with my husband actually. And my husband decided to leave advertising around the same time I did. And my husband basically started like a luxury incubator where we invest in a few brands. Mm-hmm. And he had been working at Publicis. James, my partner, was working at Publicis. They were working on the Citibank account. And James was like an Uber producer. So James pulls Bill aside and he said like, hey, I've got these hair care formulations that I've been working on for like 10 years. What do I do? I think they're almost ready. And Bill was like, what? Like they've known each other at this point for a while, like a couple years.
Yeah.
Bill had no idea that he was doing this on the set. No one knew.
Well, it's probably smart.
I know. No one knew. And, you know, James had come from the beauty industry. He'd worked at Clairol a really long time, worked on Revlon and L'Oreal. Mm-hmm. So people knew he was sort of a beauty guy, but no one knew he was doing this on his own on the side. And so my thought process was, okay, he's either crazy or he's really passionate and he's a genius. And so Bill basically said to him, look, I don't know anything about beauty. You really need to talk to Lynn. And I had not met him before. Bill connected us. We had dinner together, actually, with James and his husband. He had just gotten married at the time. And his husband is a key part of our story, too, because his husband's name is Masa. And Masa is our muse, Masami. Which also means truly beautiful in Japanese. But Masa is... Yeah, I know, right? It's like one of those goosebump things when we figure that out. We're like, oh, amazing. But Masa's from Northeast Japan in this little fishing town. And that was the inspiration for James's kind of figuring out to use this ocean botanical that we use that comes from there. And being able to sort of make our products, you know, super hydration, no sulfates, no parabens, no phthalates, like doing all that. So Masa has a big role, I think, in bringing that Japanese sensibility and culture and kind of being our bullshit barometer too,
mm-hmm.
On the product themselves. And, you know, he's good at that. And so I met them. We just clicked instantly. It was one of those things where, you know, certain people, you just feel the chemistry and you get on.
Yep.
Well, and it was like that with James and Masa too. And I just remember Masa, like the very first night I met him, he starts telling me the story of when they got married, which was just a few months before. Then this was 2 years ago and it would have been a few months before. And how Masa's mother flew to New York for the wedding, but she didn't know they were getting married. She didn't know he was gay.
Oh.
So James would go back home and visit as Masa's friend, I'm using the air,
right,
and she didn't put it together, and Masa couldn't bring himself to tell her, and Masa has two brothers, so each of the brothers tried to sit her down and tell her as well, and they couldn't do it either. So she flies to New York, and that's when she finally realized what was going on, which was a bit shocking, but she obviously got over it. She's lovely. I went to Japan.
Aww. Really?
Yeah, like doesn't speak any English, lovely, lovely family. And you know, he kind of told me that story and I was like, wow, that's, I don't know what to say. It's bold. It's
yeah.
Scary. It's right. A lot of things, but you figured it out. Like you made it work.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of what we're doing now. Just like, okay, just figuring it out. But so we decided, so James and I decided to partner together to launch Masami. It took us about somewhere around 18 months to get everything done, like all the ducks in the row. Cause once, I tried the products, they were amazing. Just like he said, and we did a little more tweaking to the formulations to make them even cleaner. Mm-hmm. It's actually, and one of the reasons people always say to me, why would it take him 10 years? Well, it's really hard to make clean hair care that works. High performance mm-hmm. clean hair care. It's easy to make clean hair care if you don't care about the performance, but if you care about it being high performing and you want it to do the things we wanted it to do with adding hydration and shine and hair health and stuff, it's hard because you have to find alternative ingredients to the stuff you're taking out.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to follow EU standards, which are way stricter than the US. We did a little bit more cleaning up of our formula, and then we did tons of consumer testing. So we tested on all kinds of hair types, anyone we could find that, you know, every ethnicity we could find, we did lots of testing. And once we felt like we, you know, had that, then we did the, you know, the packaging, the branding. We hired a really good package designer, you know, figured out our go-to-market strategy and all that stuff. And then we launched in February of this year.
Wow. So tell me about the brand. Tell me like what's, yeah.
Yeah. So we launched with a shampoo, a conditioner, a shine serum, and a styling cream.
Okay.
And it uses it's infused with, I should say, a Japanese ocean botanical called Mikabu. You probably have never heard of it. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of it. It's like, it's funny though. I was talking to someone today we're going to partner with. He's actually the founder of Ramen Hero. It's a ramen meal kit that you can order. It's an amazing product. I just ordered a ton. But he's Japanese. And he was like, of course I know Mikabu. And it's funny because I'm not used to that reaction because most people don't know what it is.
Right.
And I think to Japanese people, it's like kale. It's like saying avocados or kale. You know what I mean? They use it all the time. It's part of their staple. It's part of their diet. They even put it in their skincare and hair care, which is why I think James had that inspiration to use that as our hero ingredient. So we launched at New York Fashion Week. We had two shows that we did. This was in February, right before COVID also, mm-hmm. by the way.
Right.
It's very weird for me to think back because it's not that long ago and think of those fashion shows. And we were literally crammed into these little small spaces in Soho with overcapacity crowd at the fashion show. I don't know if that will ever come back to being like that. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. But it was just a few weeks later that everything went into lockdown. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of had to sort of reevaluate what we were doing because I had been talking to some salons at the time, which obviously the salons all went on pause right. and shut down. So we just really focused on our digital acquisition efforts, our building our customer base, creating a lot of content. We're super active on social. We write blog posts every week. We just do a lot of that. And that's another thing I'll say to people if you're feeling stuck or like things are out of control, because so much is out of your control right now, mm-hmm. try to focus on things you can control. And your own content is something you can control. So whether it's doing live streaming videos, which we've started to do, and by the way, I hate doing videos like of myself. I just hate it. I don't mind podcasts. I just hate videos.
Yeah.
My partner's really good at it. And so I make him do the videos most of the time, but we've gotten really good at live streaming. And there's lots of tools like Restream now that you can use that'll stream on all your platforms at once. So it's great. And so there's things like that, that you can control. So whether mm-hmm. it's just sharing, we did a bunch of founder videos actually in New York, like a month ago, where it was like sharing what Masami means, sharing how we met, you know, just sharing little bits of the story that you might not find elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do those things. You can do blog posts. You can create partnerships. I just talked about Ramen Hero. We're going to actually do a partnership with them for Japanese Culture Day on November 3rd.
Oh, wow.
And a few other brands that have Japanese inspiration or ingredients. So that's super fun. But like there's stuff like that that you can do, even if the world is collapsing around you. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And actually finding partnerships was one of the best things that we did because first of all, it's small businesses helping each other, mm-hmm. which I'm a big believer in.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, it is like you make great connections. You find yeah. other founders, you get good advice, you share notes. Like that's just been a really fulfilling part of what we've been doing. And we've made some really good friends with other brands that, you know, are like-minded, that are trying to create good products and good for you products. And, you know, and that's been really gratifying.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, there's so much to be said about surrounding yourself with like-minded people. It doesn't mean that you have to all be doing the same thing, but you know, you're the average of the five people that you hang around with, right? The five people that you spend the most time with, you become like them, think like them. And that connection piece is huge. And even during times, well, like we've experienced times like this, I guess we haven't in our generation anyway, but you know, with COVID, I think sometimes the tendency is to think, since it's not what we're used to, it's not, I'm doing air quotes again, normal, then never mind, it can't happen. And it goes back to looking for possibility. Like I've made amazing connections just doing this, just having people on my podcast and showcasing their greatness and their ingenuity and how they're living a big life. And those connections matter. You never know what's going to happen from that. Yeah.
I'm a big believer in that and a believer in like living with a spirit of generosity.
Yeah.
Because I've always been asked, like people will reach out to me and be like, hey, can I get your advice? Or will you mentor me? I had somebody reach out to me on LinkedIn who I didn't know, who was like, I need a mentor. I'm launching this SEO business. It's going to be an hour of your time every month. And I was like, sure, you know, I'm happy to give you whatever help I can give you. If you think it's valuable, great. Like, Because I feel like at some point someone will do that for me. Mm-hmm. And people do that for me. They don't even realize it. But like, I think also your mentors don't have to be older, you know, like I learn more from the younger people on my team mm-hmm. and also from my own teenagers.
Absolutely. You know what I mean?
It's like about how they engage with marketing and brands and behavior. I mean, oh my God, I brought my son and this is now we're going to get into blending everything. Cause I'm a big believer in like, you just blend it all together and you kind of separate the personal and the work. And to your point about five people, if I'm around those five people, I want them to be people I really love.
Yes.
You know, and yes. Like people I trust and I love.
Yes.
So I brought my son. I don't separate out work and life much, but I started a few years ago kind of like taking that philosophy. And he went to Cannes with me, with my husband and I. Cannes, for those who don't know, Cannes Lions is like the Oscars of the advertising world, okay? It's like the big award mm-hmm. show. And it's in the south of France in Cannes, and it's amazing. So at the time, he was 15. Yeah, this was 4 years ago. He was 15. And I thought he would love it. I thought he would just enjoy the whole energy of the place. You know, you go and see all these award shows and people mm-hmm. on stage and getting their award, and you get to see the best advertising in the world. And it's just lots of stuff going on. And it was just so interesting because he had the opposite reaction. Wow. He literally was like, you people are crazy. Giving each other awards for things like a Burger King ad. He was like, I don't even know what to say to that. It's actually pathetic. He literally was like, and it was kind of for me like, oh, he's actually kind of right. You know, here we are. We're like navel gazing, thinking how great we are, right?
Navel gazing.
And then the 15-year-old points out, he's like, no, this is pathetic. Like, you guys make this into this big award show and it is nothing. Like, this stuff isn't even award worthy. It's ridiculous. So that made me also realize that generation, because my daughter's the same way, they just have a very different relationship with advertising. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a cynicism, a skepticism, a lack of trust. You know, they don't see the big, you know, those big like 1984 Apple ad, you know, that was like everybody was talking about when that launched. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you know, they are likely to see a brand try to infiltrate TikTok or Twitch and think it's sad. You know what I mean? They'll have mm-hmm. some commentary about like, oh my God, that's so cheesy that brand tried to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's been interesting learning from them because that is the new consumer and that is the future. Mm-hmm. And I think for any brand that launches, ours included, granted, we may not be targeting teenagers. We're probably a little overpriced for teenagers, but they will become our customers at some point.
Right.
You know, so you kind of, it's like getting in their head is kind of, it's both scary and terrifying and interesting at the same time.
Did I see on the website that you have, like you give back? Yes. Can you talk about that?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because I should have said it earlier. But yes, when we launched, one of the things that I've always noticed about the beauty industry, because I've worked in a lot of brands over my career. I've worked on L'Oreal and Clinique and Vichy and Nexus and all sorts of things. So anyway, but one of the things that most of those have in common is they don't really care about giving back. Mm-hmm. Most of the beauty brands have no particular nonprofit or cause. They just care about making you look good, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But I just have a belief, and my partner does too, that brands have to do more these days. You can't just be selfish and just make your products awesome, which ours are, and expect it to be enough. Mm-hmm. So we launched the Masmi Institute, which is a nonprofit foundation that helps fund ocean research and education in Northeast Japan. Mm-hmm. And the reason we did that is because that little town where Masa grew up that mm-hmm. I visited was the town that was absolutely destroyed by the tsunami in 2011.
Wow.
And it hasn't come back. So we went there in 2019 and they're just rebuilding some of the buildings that were wiped out, and the ocean bay is still not recovered. Like, they have all these issues with sea urchins and all sorts of problems. So we fund research. There's a particular guy up there who does it, who dives in the bay and documents things. And it's our way of saying, look, if we're taking from the ocean, we want to give back.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I asked about that. Well, first of all, because I wanted you to talk about it, but secondly, because I think for like with what I see with my kids, so my kids are 14 and 16. And what I see with them is they want to be part of something that is meaningful, but they also want to make a difference somehow.
Yes.
And so as thinking down the road, these current teens that will be your customers at some point, the fact that you have, like you started with a way to give back, I think is going to speak volumes to them. I mean, as I've done research on the different generations and what's meaningful to them and everything, you know, that's something that keeps coming back over and over and over again.
I totally agree. I think, I just think that generation is far more demanding of the things that, frankly, we should have been doing all along, whether it's quality, whether it's, you know, taking care of the environment, whether it's sustainability, all those things. I just think they're less forgiving about brands that don't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more about like a responsibility that you have towards the planet, towards each other, and needing to make sure that's part of how you're thinking about it. I mean, one thing that we are doing that is a solve for something I don't like, we are in plastic bottles. We're an ocean brand, and we're in plastic bottles, right? And by the way, the beauty industry is like the worst offender of plastic and recycling, because a lot of those beautiful custom packaging with metallic finishes and gold embossed on the bottles, you can't recycle very easily.
Sure.
So, you know, the beauty industry is kind of like, they're just not good about that. So we launched in plastic bottles because we're in the shower and it's one of those things where you can't be in glass.
Right.
Yeah. You're a shower brand. And you can also, it really limits you in terms of the other materials that you can use. Like we looked at bamboo, we looked at metals, but they rust and that, you know, there's lots of different things that go on. So we launched with our plastic bottles, but we're making a large size sustainable ceramic bottle that I'm excited about that should be done in the next couple of months. And it's not the perfect answer because people are like, yeah, but ceramic can break too. I'm like, I know, but it doesn't break into little shards that you can't see in the shower that you're going to step on.
Right.
So, you know, I'm more comfortable doing that. And if people don't want to do it, they don't want to do it, but at least we'll have the option.
Right.
And that to me is the key. It's like, you got to start changing behavior somewhere.
Right.
And I also think if you make something beautiful, I have so many products in my bathroom, personal care, beauty, skincare, everything, because I get so much from the industry. I go to events and, you know, I just collect all this. My husband drives me nuts. But I would say 95% of it to me is aesthetically ugly. It's just not attractive. You know, you don't want to have it sitting on your counter. There are some beautiful there's some beautiful packaging out there, but a lot of it just isn't. So I think if you give somebody the option of having something beautiful and sustainable, I'm hoping that people will see the benefit of that and opt for something that is refillable and hopefully helps us eliminate the plastic. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's an experiment. And if that doesn't work, we'll try something else. You know what I mean? Like you can always change.
Right.
You just move on and you go, okay, people don't like the ceramic bottle. Fine. We'll do a stainless steel bottle. We'll do a whatever, you know, figure it out.
Yeah. When our family, when we were traveling in the motorhome, you know, there wasn't space in the bathroom to like have all the products. And so we ended up buying, well, those things like you see in some hotels that are on the wall, they're stuck on the wall. And so then we would just, you know, obviously refill that. But that's plastic too, though. Like they were all plastic, but.
Okay, that's plastic, but at least you're using it multiple times. So you're not just one and done.
Right. So it's not very pretty.
No.
Like if you're going for aesthetically pleasing, you know, that's, but, You know, I love the refill idea too, where you get something and it's beautiful. And then like, even if it's a subscription thing where you, yeah, like every month you get your refill and squirt it in there and it's in something that is recyclable or whatever,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly. So we're doing like cardboard cartons for the refills.
Oh,
exactly.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So you can just get it, pour it in, easy, easy peasy. So yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. I love it. Well, thank you. Oh my goodness. Thank you for your time. And thank you for all your expertise and sharing your journey. I wrote down five takeaways. So, okay. So listeners, if you're in a place to take notes for wrap up, this is a good time to do that. And if not, you can listen to it again on a replay. So, number one, look past your obstacles to see possibility.
Number two, you said it better than I did, but I like it.
Number two, control what you can and let go of what you can't. Number three, know that you are worth the risk. Number four, surround yourself with people who make you better. And, yes, and number five, be a giver. And yeah. I know these are all simple, right? They're all simple, but I tell you what, there's common threads in anybody that I talk with that lives big. There's always common threads, you know, and I love seeing that. I love seeing people shine and doing what's on their heart and not be in jobs where they're miserable. Life's too short and too long for that, right?
Totally. So,
all right. Well, thanks again, Lynn, for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, it was super fun. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. And until next time, take action, live big, and stay dialed in.